they want to kind of be able to take you back in time to, you know, when burlesque was king, and you could walk in and see a magic show close up and in person. And so everything is kind of a throwback, which is great for what we're doing, because we are definitely trying to send people into the past with close up magic.
Heba Haba Al was the one that gave me the best advice at New York Lounge. And he took me aside and he said, you know, work this place a year and then get out. He says, because you'll work a year, you'll get anything you're going to get out of the place, you're going to get in a year, and then get out of this place. And he was really right.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com. Today we have a twofer. First off are two young guys with an old idea they are making new again. And in the second half of the podcast is one older guy who has lived and been an integral part of magic history and is helping the two younger guys bring light to their, quote, new idea. Chicago has long been a hotbed of magic activity, with many notable magicians coming from that corner of the upper Midwest and many who still reside there. For many decades, Chicago had several bars and lounges within the city limits that featured magic as the main form of entertainment. Today, there are still some in the outlying suburban areas, but nothing like during the former glory days of magic bars that ended in the late 1990s. Joey Cranford and John Sterk are the driving forces behind the new Chicago Magic Lounge in the uptown underground part of Chicago. They will be open every Thursday night with close-up, bar magic, and stage magic performed by local and visiting magicians. They will be part of the late-night variety lineup in this location that will feature burlesque shows on Fridays and Saturdays and other types of entertainment on the alternate nights. It is intended to bring back the Prohibition era when burlesque was king and close-up magic was queen? Well, perhaps that wasn't a very good analogy, but you get the idea. And one of the inspirational and artistic forces who is the technical advisor behind this venture is Bill Weimer, who was a house magician from the 1970s through the 1990s at 7 out of the 9 or so magic bars that operated in the city. Bill literally wrote the book on Chicago bar magic entitled Now You See Them, Now You Don't, and subtitled My Life and the Magic Bars of Chicago. In this second part of the podcast, Bill shares some stories from his book and his life about this golden era of bar magic, particularly as it relates to the Chicago area. This is an interesting podcast of particular interest to those living in or around or even visiting Chicago. If you want to learn a little about the history of bar magic, and particularly the names and locations of magic bars in Chicago, then you'll love hearing Bill's stories about this golden age. But first, let's hear from Joey Cranford and John Sterk as they tell us about the Chicago Magic Lounge here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com, and I am excited today to welcome a couple of friends from up in Chicago, John Sterk and Joey Cranford. Hey there, guys.
Hey, Scotty.
Well, hey there, Scott.
How are you doing in Chicago? Is it nice and cold up your way? Got some snow, do you, or what?
It's a little brisk, but we manage.
you're used to it.
You're in Texas, right?
That's right, in Houston. Yeah. We don't get very much of that.
Yeah, no, I'm from Houston. I've been up here about 12 years now.
Well, I'm from Illinois, so we just
switched
places.
I found that you were moving there, so I had to leave.
Exactly.
Can't have two magicians occupy the same space at the same time. It's a quantum physics experiment.
Well, you guys are in the same place, though, in Chicago, with stuff going on all around you. How does this happen when two matters collide like that? Seems like it's be physically impossible.
I think, like in a Gazinta box, there just seems to be room.
Oh. Since speaking of magic, and a lot of magicians, I know you got a lot of stuff going on up there. Now, Chicago, to me, has always been like a hub of magic. Of course, think of in olden days, Magic Castle was the mecca of magic and magicians. Still today, where a lot of magicians from all over the world will convene, and you kind of run into people, and that's kind of the place to be and everything. But I always felt like that Chicago was where a lot of things happened. And I remember reading in Francis Marshall's column in Around Town, Around Chicago in the Linking Ring magazine, all the different things happening. Guys always had a lot of stuff going on. But what was kind of cool, I felt almost like that I was there when I would read about her talking about the the New York Lounge or Shulian's and some of these places, which have long passed. I know that you guys are running a new thing. It's called the Chicago Magic Playhouse, or what is it?
The Chicago Magic Lounge.
Lounge, okay. And that's going to be opening up here soon, or has?
Well, we actually just got word last night that we are a go for March 5th, and then every Thursday after that, and basically until time runs out. We were waiting on a couple of licensing issues, and you being from Illinois, you know Chicago's a little tricky when it comes to any kind of licensing, whether it's liquor, public performance license, just to be able to sell tickets, sell booze for an event space. But all of that stuff came through last night, right at the end of the time, and so we got an announcement at 10:30 last night that we were a go for a grand opening date.
So prior to that, you have had like a soft opening, I'm assuming?
We did. We were allowed to come into the space once they got the occupancy license. What that means is that we can legally be in the space, but we couldn't legally sell tickets or legally sell booze. So we just kind of had a party. We allowed people just to come in and check out some free stuff and just hang out in the space. And it was really great because the owners of the club were there. They were expecting about maybe 25, 30 people, and we astounded them with about 85, 90 people in that room, just showing how much desire there is to see close-up magic in the city.
Was that pretty much what it is, close-up? Again, going back to kind of Shulian's in those days,
well,
kind of a thing?
Yeah, you know, this. I know the owner of the club from long back, and we were both improvisers in the Second City world, and he started going off in his fringe world. I went off in my fringe world, which brought me into the world of magic, and him into the world of burlesque. But we reconnected, and he said, I want to give you a night of magic. And I was reading a book that Bill Wyman wrote. He's an old Chicago magician. He's not old. Sorry, Bill. But he's old time, old school. He played every single magic bar, club, lounge, whatever.
Going back to New York Lounge, Shulian's, a little bit of magic, those
kinds of
places.
Magic too, bit of magic. Mr. C's Magic Lounge.
Mm-hmm.
So I read that book and I was like, oh man, this is such a not to hit with the word too hard there, but it was a magical time in Chicago where you could just see that kind of stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
And I saw that was lacking, and there's some really great talent in Chicago right now, being done on stages in the world of magic, magicians performing, but no one's doing close-up magic the way that they did at New York, Shulian's and the little bit of magic clubs. And so that's what I wanted to bring back with the space that I was given.
Where is the New York Magic Lounge located?
It's basically, you know, Magic Inc. Up on the north side in Lincoln Square, up on Lincoln Avenue. This New York Magic Lounge was basically just south of Foster on Lincoln. Now it's a spa or like a health kind of.
It's a grocery store, I thought.
No, that's the Jewel. It's across from the old Jewel there.
All right.
Yeah, it's like some physician, like a chiropractor. Who knows? But you can actually still see a little bit of the old outside. Lewis Carrion was actually showing me, and you can see, I think there's like a spade carved into a brick or something like that. That's really crazy, but there's a little bit of remnants up there.
So it's just walking distance from the Magic Inc. Magic shop there?
It used to be. That's the old New York Lounge.
Yeah.
The Chicago Magic Lounge, our new venue, is going to be at a theater in the Uptown neighborhood called the Uptown Underground.
Okay.
And that venue is owned and operated by the Kiss Kiss Cabaret Burlesque Troupe.
All right.
They had a regular burlesque show at the Greenhouse Theater in Lincoln Park neighborhood for years and years, and they finally were able to save up enough cash to build and own their own venue.
And they did this in the downtown area?
Nope, it's in the Uptown area, on the far north side.
North side, okay.
Almost as far from downtown as you can get.
Okay. So it's really still considered Chicago as opposed to a suburb.
Oh, yeah. Well within the city limits.
Yeah, you still got Edgewater before you hit Milwaukee. But it's you know, it's in this entertainment district that every alderman who's ever been elected in Chicago has said, we're going to rebuild this entertainment district. It's where the old Uptown Theater was. It's where the Riviera Theater is. It's where the Aragon Ballroom is, where there's still concerts happening all the time.
The Green Mill Jazz Club is still there.
Capone's old Green Mill is just right across the corner. And so we're going to kind of fit into this late night live entertainment world that they're trying to build. Especially being something completely different than the neighbors are used to.
So the place they had before, this burlesque house you were talking about, has that closed down while they're working to build this place and get this started? Or
oh no, the Greenhouse Theater is still an active theater. They just have different residences and different renters each night of the week. Mm-hmm. And the Kiss Kiss Cabaret was in residence there on Saturday nights for several years.
And
it wasn't the only place that they performed at around town, but they're excited to have their own place now. And we're excited that they're interested in having us be a part of their new lineup.
So, well, that just, I think you may have answered my question, this being a lineup. So there will be like a magic night that will not be a burlesque show, and vice versa. There'll be nights when they'll be doing burlesque.
We're going to ask John to keep his clothes on as long as he can during.
Let's hope so.
I'm going to do my best. No promises.
No problem.
This is actually one night where they're not doing burlesque, but this theater is built to kind of bring you back in time. Mm-hmm. It's a turn of the century look. The whole thing is of an era. They actually went out and bought a Prohibition era bar at an auction. So they took it apart, reinstalled it inside the club. It's gorgeous, gave it a brand new varnish. But when they bought it, they actually had a sign on the mirror behind it that said closed due to Volstead Act violations. It's legitimate. But this is just a gorgeous house that they built, and they want to kind of be able to take you back in time to, you know, when burlesque was king, and
right.
you could walk in and see a magic show close up and in person. And so everything is kind of a throwback, which is great for what we're doing, because we are definitely trying to send people into the past with close-up magic.
Yeah, like an old speakeasy kind of a thing. And it's funny, yep. Whenever, you know, of course, burlesque is really getting to be quite big. We have that here in Houston with a couple of clubs that are quite popular and sold out, it seems like, on most evenings as well. So I'm sure that's becoming more popular around the country. I know it is in New Orleans. I was talking with Michael Dardant, who also works with the burlesque, does magic as part of this, and he has some assistants that work with him. But it's funny, Joy, when you said the turn of the century, we've had a couple of these. Of course, we're in a new century now, so you mean the 20th century, not the 21st
century. Well, yeah, whenever you're in Chicago, I'm an old Chicago historian too, so anytime you say turn of the century, that is definitely the 1800s to the 1900s.
Yeah, yeah. Right, but I know there's some young listeners thinking, wait a minute, I'm only like 19, so.
I was in the turn of the century. My PlayStation got outdated to PlayStation 2.
Exactly. And so there'll be plenty of parking and everything, I'm sure, obviously, up there in this entertainment area.
If you're a local Chicagoan, and we're expecting to get a lot of local traffic, but I mean, the suburbs can come in on some trains and get to a red line, and downtown can easily get to a red line. So if you're just taking a red line train anywhere from the city, you can hop off at the Lawrence stop. We're within walking distance to a 24-hour train line, which is great because we intend to go pretty late night. With kind of an after hours magician session.
And what night of the week is that going to be? On Saturdays?
Thursdays.
Thursdays, pardon me. Okay.
You know, that's kind of a big part of what we're also trying to build. It's not just a place to have close up magic featured, but a place that magicians can all come to and hang out and meet other magicians and session. And we're going to try to build in this thing that we're toying around with, calling the Magic Lab, which would be a chance for anyone, professional, touring, amateur, to get up in front of a stage, you know, or get up in front of a live audience and try something new that they've been working on and test it out in front of an audience and see how it goes without, you know, too much pressure.
Almost kind of like a comedy improv night or something like that.
Yeah, that's funny you say that because I come from the improv world. And I used to tour, and when I would come off the road, I'd go over to Improv Olympic, and those guys were basically like a clubhouse to me. And every touring comic, Second City, they would all just end up there at the end of the night. And you just hang out with your comic friends and do bits and sit at the bar, and you'd basically close it down just talking about comedy. And mm-hmm. I noticed in the magician world, something like that was lacking, that there is no place to get together and talk about your tricks and your moves and what you're learning, what you're reading about. And I think there needed to be a home for magicians to be able to session with other people and have a beer in hand at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, you go to Magic Inc. and you see magicians hanging out all day long, and it's such a cool thing. But, you know, we're all adults. We like a beverage in hand, and we like a bar setting. And so for a place to be able to go, to have a place to go for magicians, that's a little late night, a little bit more kind of, you know, no kids hanging around. No offense to all the all the kids learn the magic. You need to do it. Yeah, continue. But you know, just a place for, you know, for socializing.
No, I understand. There's a place in England, actually, a few bars. I think there's one called Smoke and Mirrors in Bristol. I went to a while back, and it was a similar kind of thing. When I walk in, I kind of felt like I was going into one of these Harry Potter bars or something. They're wizards, because I know there were little corners of these guys, you know, practicing, shuffling cards and everything. And then the back room, they had a stage, and you would buy tickets and go back and watch the evening show on the stage, and they would bring in different guys. So it wasn't a clubhouse for magicians per se, as far as being a member of the club. Is just a place to hang out, exactly what you're talking about. Yep. With that kind of a thing where guys will be sitting around the table or around the bar, or it's like, hey, let me show you how this works. Now turn around, there'll be some patron there and say, here, pick a card. See, this works pretty cool, you know, kind of a thing. So I think I kind of understand what the concept is for the long term. So the rest of the week, the other six nights of the week, will it be the burlesque show, or will eventually you guys take another night or two, or kind of what is the long-term plan on that?
Well, I think to get started, we're going to be on Thursday nights. The burlesque is planned to be on Friday and Saturday nights. The rest of the week is yet to be determined. We're just focused on our role and being the best Thursday night magic show we could be.
Yeah. Well, along that line, I understand that there are other kinds of things. Was it Magic Chicago as well as other types of things? Tell me a little bit about some of the others that you're aware of that's kind of the, quote, competition, I guess.
Well, we definitely don't look at that as competition.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And we consciously decided to have our show on Thursday night so as not to conflict with anybody else. Magic Chicago is the first Wednesday of every month. The Magic Cabaret is every Wednesday at the Greenhouse Theater. Incidentally, same theater as where the Kiss Cabaret used to be, albeit in a different room in the same building.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about now. Yep. Okay, I've seen their show when David Parr was there. And
The Magic Parlor with Dennis Watkins at the Palmer House.
Oh,
that's on a different night.
I believe Friday.
It's Friday. Yeah. But no, we consciously made the choice to not conflict on the same night with anybody else, because we want to eventually help those guys in promoting their own shows by inviting them and to have them be featured performers at our club on Thursday.
That's a good idea. So this way that they can invite guests, because a lot of times that people don't have public shows where they can invite clients and showcase themselves, because they'll say, can we come see you someplace? So that's ideal, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Exactly. The rising card lifts all boats.
John just toasted himself with that bit. Yeah. But yeah, going back to that though, that's exactly what we're trying to build, as a community of magicians. And you know, I mean, how cool would that be if, you know, let's say the Magic Cabaret guys are working on something new, and this would they come into the Magic Lab and throw a new bit up and test it out and see if it works, and then take it over to their show, or if they maybe headline for a month, then they can plug their show and do whatever. You know, we don't want to get into a habit of, like, you know, there can be a sense of, you know, and this has kind of happened, and this has been, you know, addressed, and I want to keep everything, like, real nice and friendly. But, you know, a magician will come into town and want to do the Magic Chicago show, and then they'll want to do my show the second night, and it's like, well, you know, I mean, I don't want to get into that business, you know, double booking performers like that, but I want it to stay a little bit more just communal, in a sense, you know.
Right. Yeah, I understand. So this way that you're going to be friendly with one another. But it kind of reminds me of what you like with the David Letterman show or the Tonight Show and different stations, that one network, if you work for this network, then you're not going to be working for the other one. So it's not going to be any kind of a competition like that.
Right. And it's not necessarily that someone who goes on Magic Chicago can't work our club. It's just not in the same week. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like I wouldn't go on Letterman one night and then that same night, you know, go on Carson. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Also, as far as payment goes, is this something that people just come and they will do and donate without getting into any details or how much you're going to be paying? Is there a stipend that you might pay for some locals or people out of town, or is there maybe a certain celebrity status that you might pay, or you have a headliner? I'm assuming, obviously, that there are some criteria.
We'll have a stringent selection process
Okay.
for the people that we have come. And we have a pretty long list of people already before we've even opened,
yeah.
of people we have in mind to invite and to already come and be a part of our rotating cast. And we one of the things that we'd like to do with the Magic Lab is to try and meet some new people. Mm-hmm. When we had our preview night and we had sort of an open mic session after the main show, I was surprised. I mean, I'm a bit of a man about town, Scotty. I feel like I know pretty much every magician mm-hmm. in the greater Chicago area. I'm now the president of the SAM Assembly. I have friends all over the area. And when I see new people, people I don't know, come to the open mic, it gets me really excited that we've been able to bring these people out of the woodwork. Professionals even that I've never met and that I don't know, or amateurs or hobbyists. We're really trying to make it as a hub for Chicago magicians.
Yeah, and as you say, where Chicago magicians would meet and hang out, but then also other people who are visiting town will come and visit. That was why I was asking about the parking, because I know in the downtown area, like when I went to see Magic Cabaret, it seems like we paid $40. I mean, Houston, that's just crazy, but I guess standard.
You're not going to pay that much to park in Uptown.
Yeah, there's streets that have free parking up Lawrence and kind of around in the neighborhoods. There's free parking. There's metered parking, which shuts off around 10 or 10:30 at night. But as far as like a parking lot valet, none of that. I think there is a parking lot behind there that if you want to pay a little bit extra to have a parking spot, you know, yeah, you could do that. But for the most part, it's just neighborhood parking, and people who are familiar with Chicago, they'll be able to find a place. Yeah.
And so again, we were talking about bringing close up, and I'm assuming again that this will be a featured type of a thing, that close will be it. However, you're going to be having a stage so they can do some stand up kind of stuff too. Or?
Exactly. And this is the format of the show. And it was really funny when I was getting my first bit of questions about how the night was going to flow was I said, show begins at 8. So they said, well, if the show begins at 8, what time do the doors open? I said, oh, no, you don't understand. The doors open at 8. The show begins at 8. Right when you walk in, I have a guy working the bar doing bar magic, traditional old school Doc Easton style stuff. You sit down at a table, somebody's greeting you there with close up. And that'll happen for about 30 minutes. We'll throw up a stage act. We'll go back to the bar magic, go back to the close up magic, throw up another stage act, and then the headliner will come up. And it's all kind of paced out within 2 hours, 2.5 hours, to kind of bring it down, put it up on stage, bring it down, put it up on stage, so that the stage doesn't get the focus of the night. It will have a nice headlining spot, about 35 minutes for a headliner, but the night is all about just the entire magical experience of it, just being surrounded by it.
So you're not looking necessarily at having a lot of strolling magicians that are going from table to table with a half dozen guys just kind of inundating the audience?
Well, we did that on opening night. I had every single table worker who had kind of started off this club, you know, said, oh, we'll all be there. And we had such a big turnout. I was just like, go to the tables. And we had like 7 guys working the tables that night. Mm-hmm. It was really great. But as we go, we'll probably have, we have one bar magician, 2 table workers, an opening act, which can do some table work as well, and the headliner, who's also welcome to do table acts as well. So between, you know, the 4 strollers, and then the bar magician, they should cover just about everybody.
Mm-hmm. And how many people will that hold as far as the room?
The theater seats 150 people. Okay. Now that is just packing them in with every bar stool, with the seats with the bad sight lines, which we might actually take those seats out. But the main floor can hold anywhere from like 85 to 100, and it's a really nice size room.
Well, let me go back just a minute. You were talking about the New York Lounge, it being close to Magic Inc. I remember, I'm glad that I did get to go there. In fact, I was there with Jay Marshall one evening back when Frances was still home and she was ill, but he said, well, we're going to go out to dinner. So we walked over to the New York Lounge. I remember sitting there and there was some guy, I don't remember who it was, sat down at the table, started doing close-up magic. And this was really old-style magic, and I'm sure pretty much very Chicago from the standpoint of not – strolling and working out of his pockets, but just physically sitting down and lapping and doing stuff as if he's a guest at our table. Very, very interesting and different style of magic than really I was, have been used to. Of course, I've seen, I remember the older days, of course, with Slidini and Al Goshman and others. But for the most part, it seems like that the newer style is standing up. So that was just kind of the old way. So do you have some people that are, I mean, that's kind of old style still doing that? Is that kind
of? Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. I do it. It's a holdover from the original Shulian's days. One of the guys who still works at Shulian's by the name of Al James, taught me about sitting down to join the group at the table for a couple of reasons. One, it creates a more intimate space, and two, it's kind of awkward if you're standing and everybody else is sitting and they got to look up at you, and it's not entirely comfortable. But
and they're normally just staring right there at your crotch, I guess.
Kind of. Exactly. Yeah. I there's sometimes when I want that, but that's not one of the times I want that. We certainly have a number of old school influences that mm-hmm. we'll be bringing to the lounge. Joey mentioned before the book written by Bill Weimer about the history of Chicago bar magic. The title is Now You See Them, Now You Don't. And I'm really grateful that Bill wrote this book mm-hmm. because it is able to describe an era of magic in Chicago that I wasn't around for mm-hmm. in the 70s and 80s. I didn't move to Chicago until 2007. So all that stuff was gone by the time that I moved here. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, not only did the book serve as an inspiration for Joey in setting up the lounge, the Chicago Magic Lounge as we know it today, but Bill Weimer himself, the author of the book, is sort of been like a technical advisor.
He's my consultant.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the Chicago Magic Lounge. He was there working the tables on the preview night, and he's welcome. I hope he comes back. I'm sure he will.
Yeah, he's part of our crew, if you want to call it a crew, which I want to call it a crew. When he showed up and he we have a uniform that we're going to be wearing for the table workers and the close up guys. It's going to be the old traditional New York Magic Lounge uniform, which is black pants, white shirt, black tie. Maybe a black vest. Now you could do a black bow tie or tie, whichever. But when he showed up in that uniform and was working these tables, standing and sitting, he made a presence. And I started to notice some of my other guys weren't wearing a uniform. They were sitting down at a table. You couldn't tell anyone apart. You couldn't tell that anything was actually happening. Mm-hmm. But Bill Weimer brought in that energy, that clapping and everybody cheering. You look over there and you see a guy wearing a black vest, a white shirt, and a black tie, you know something's going on. You know he's part of this. And so that, you know, with sitting down, you could lose your magician in a crowd, and people are saying, well, what are we waiting for? What's happening, you know? But if they see that energy and they see that magician standing out from the rest of them, then it all kind of helps build that night and the expectation that, oh, maybe he'll come to me, you know?
Yeah, cool. Well, now, tell me, how do people get in touch with you if they're from out of town or they're even local and they want to see about?
It's the funniest thing. People have been finding us, and people that are bigger than I thought would ever contact me have been contacting me, and it's just amazing. Real easy. We're on Facebook. That's the number one way to find us is at Chicago Magic Lounge on Facebook. And then we're also on Instagram at Chicago Magic Lounge. We're also on Twitter at @shy_magic_lounge. We also have a website. Guess what that website is? ChicagoMagicLounge.com. Yeah. Somehow that was available.
Not real creative, but easy to remember.
our contact information is on there. We do have an email address set up for ChicagoMagicLounge@gmail.com. But through the Facebook with the messaging system that's on there, I read it personally every day. New messages come in about performance opportunities and membership opportunities. And this is also something I kind of wanted to talk about with our membership. We do have a membership for magicians. But yeah, so they can contact us through the website. There's plenty of links on there. There's a spot to fill out interest. You know, there's all kinds of forms on the actual website itself. If you go to ChicagoMagicLounge.com, there's a, There's a little tab that says, I'm interested in membership. If you go to the contact page, there's a section, hey, I'm interested in performing, and just fill those out and send them, and it comes right into my inbox, in my own personal email.
Now, the bar is open earlier in the day, I assume, during noon or afternoon, and so if people just come in, have a drink?
No, it's a theater for now, it's going to be it's pretty much set up for being a theater. Now, what happened the night we were there, we happened to get there about 2 hours early. It was an opening night. We had a lot of things to set up. I wanted to make sure everything was in place. And we had guests coming in at 6:15, 6:30. We're like, you guys lost? And they're like, no, we're here for the magic. It's like, well, it starts at 8. And they're like, we know. And so then that gave us, you know, a whole hour and a half to do some more table stuff. And, you know, so, I mean, we'll probably open the doors around 7:30. Just to let people in. But yeah, I mean, pretty much it's a theater, so it runs in the evening time.
And so just alcohol and any kind of snacks, not dinner or anything?
No kitchen yet.
Mm-hmm. That's something that's down the road that's been planned?
It could be. That's all our owner, Chris Biddle.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Now, the two of you co-producers, or what are your titles? Or as far as what are your responsibilities?
But I gave John a title to mull over. I was like, you are going to be, and I forgot what that title was, and you said, no thanks.
Yeah, that was probably wise on my part.
Yeah.
So you're nothing.
No, I am.
John is completely meaningless. This is my club. I own the whole thing. John, please come back and perform with us.
All right, fine. You talk me into it. No, I guess you would call me house magician and musical director.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. He's definitely one of our crew. And to go back real fast on the crew thing, I was lucky enough to somehow randomly cross paths with Bill Malone on my birthday. And Bill Malone was just an amazing guy. And I'm a concierge at a hotel, and he was a guest of my hotel. And we were just kind of – I just looked up like, whoa, Bill Malone, hello. Yeah. And so we ended up having the whole next day, and we sessioned for about 4 hours at a local restaurant that we had a private booth at. And we got to talking about this lounge and his concepts of what he did in Florida for his magic bar. And he said one of the best things you can do is to form a team, form a group, so that they can grow together as performers. And and really, you know, he said, I would have people coming in and said, you know, I want to see the guy that does the aces trick. And it's like, well, the guy who does the aces trick actually isn't in tonight, but I got a guy over here who does a killer rope routine. And so that each performer had their own tricks, their own style. And nobody was just coming in and, you know, like, let's say John does his thumb tie routine. And if he's not working that night and they say, oh, I want to see that thumb tie routine, one of my guys, Lewis, he's not going to walk up and do the thumb tie routine because, you know, hey, that's John. You know, we appreciate you coming tonight, but John will be back next week. Come on back for the thumb tie routine. And so I want to build a crew of table hoppers and a bar magician. Now, my opening acts and my headliners, those are going to be the people that are going to come in and make a difference, and, you know, with the group. And they'll headline for about a month, and then we'll look for someone new to come in. So John's like original crew member, helped build this all, and he actually built a crew here in Chicago. I don't know what the name of it is. I think it's just Sturck's Magic Club.
I started my own magic club with just a few of my close friends in Chicago. That's how I met Joey. I just called it the Session Club because the SAM, the IBM, and independent clubs, none actually meet in the city of Chicago, which I thought was a crying shame. So I decided to start my own. I met in the back room at Magic Inc. at the Magic Shop, and that's how I met Joey. Somebody brought him in as a guest, and we hit it off from there. And when Joey started to kick around the idea for a new performing venue for magicians, I was the first to sign on.
Yeah. So his role is crew member, magician extraordinaire, and also music director. No one else will touch that baby grand piano.
I won't let him.
Not the way he touches it. And then you know, whatever else I might need ideas to bounce off But I'm kind of the producer of it. My wife really helps out a lot with bouncing ideas. As we're recording this podcast, she's actually back at home tweaking the website, which is nice.
It is a good idea, certainly, of having a crew like we were talking about, because they're all invested in the success. Rather than having someone who is going to be coming in and they feel as if that they're just an hourly employee or something, then if you make it great, if not, but that's fine too, but you're basically a paycheck to them. But if you have a group that they feel as if that they're part of the team and they're helping out each other and they say, hey, I don't do this, but this guy does, so he can help you with this or whatever, then I think you would have much better success. So I think you're kind of on the right track there.
Yeah, it seems right. And I'm also looking for young performers who haven't really had their stride yet. And so, you know, they don't have a place to perform. And so they're going to get all their friends to come out and watch them do some magic. And if I've got an energetic young performer bringing in some people who've never actually seen him perform, then that's going to be a pretty successful thing.
And again, when you're saying young performer, since this is a bar, I assume that they have to be at least 21.
Yeah, but I'm almost 40, so young performers meaning, you know, 21, 20, you know, 25, right. Even 30.
Young is relative, Scotty.
Yes.
Well, again, I just want to make sure. I guess there are going to be some, perhaps, whose parents might listen and say, "Hey, this would be a great place to bring my kids."
Yeah, we do have one crew member who's you know, underage, but that doesn't make a difference as performance goes. As far as young kids coming in, that's a detail that's, you know, we're like I said, we've just gotten our liquor license. We've just gotten our performance license. Whether or not we can get minors in, maybe we can without a parent, but it's not specifically just a bar. So it's a theater that serves drinks. And, you know, so, I mean, you can't say, hey, if you're under 18, you can't come to the Goodman Theater because, you know, we sell alcohol. So I have a good feeling, you know, we're going to be able to invite in young people. However, if they're 10 and 11 years old, they're not going to get the magic. This is a sophisticated magic. This is bar magic. It's you know, it's not bright colors and
right. It's adult themed, but not going to be.
Exactly.
Kind of,
and, you know, the idea of adult-themed magic just sounds perverted to me. But it is just more of a, you know, a kid's not going to get a card trick. And we're going to be doing a lot of card tricks, you know. Yeah,
you're not going to have Bozo come in and do a guest spot type of
thing. If WGN's Bozo can come in and do a guest spot, I will let him headline for a month. If I can just play the bucket game. I want to play that bucket
game. Grand prize game.
Yes. So, Bozo, you're the exception, but yeah.
Let me go back then. You mentioned the subscription or the club membership. What is this all about?
So it all came about whenever we were talking about magic, you know, magicians going to see magic shows. And, you know, it's a costly affair. You know, we spend money on our magic, and to go out and watch a magic show, that's another, you know, hefty, you know, fee. And I thought about it being more of a membership-based thing. So you pay up front. And then you can just come in whenever you want. And it all goes money. The money just goes right back into the club to promote, to use the money for advertising, for whatever else we need. It all just kind of goes back in. So, it's not to gouge the magicians either. We just want to give them a home, but we also, you know, would like the support a little bit up front. So I've developed two passes. One is a 6-month pass and one is a year long pass. The 6-month pass is $35. It's called the half pass. The year long membership is called the classic pass, and that's $50.
Gotcha. And for that, they get a discount price to come in, basically?
No, they get in for free.
For free, then, because they paid in advance for that. Okay,
exactly.
Gotcha. Okay.
And the membership card is going to be basically a playing card with our logo on the back, and we'll keep a track and say, oh, John's the 7 of clubs, and, you know, he's paid up. And we'll keep track on, you know, on our end on when everybody's, you know, payment is up, that kind of thing. But yeah, it's going to be fun. So with a classic pass and a half pass, magicians will hopefully get that reference and then come in. But you know, this is just for magicians. So, you know, the public is going to be paying a ticketed price. It's just basically to promote it to magicians, to get magicians to come into the club and be part of our community.
And at this point, what have you set the ticket prices?
$15 is the first ticket for our grand opening. We're going to see how that goes.
On March 5th, you said?
Yeah, March 5th is going to be $15. We have two shows scheduled. So at 8 o'clock is going to be a $15 show. If you want to stick around, watch the 10 o'clock show. It's just an additional $5 more. So if you pay $20 and you can stay all night. If you want to come in and just catch the 10 o'clock show, which we're hoping to get some people in, but I know it's late on a Thursday. If you want to come in and catch the late night Thursday show, it's going to be $10. And, you'll catch a headliner, and then we'll roll into the Magic Lab, the experimental part of the night.
That sounds like a lot of fun, something that's going to be very successful.
I hope so.
Before we close then, give me the website. You said the Facebook page for the Chicago Magic Lounge, but it's www.chicagomagiclounge.com, right?
That's right, chicagomagiclounge.com, and the Facebook is facebook.com/Chicago Magic Lounge.
Sounds great. Thank you guys very much. I wish you nothing but the best of success, and I look forward to coming up and visiting it myself sometime.
And We have a headlining spot for you, Scott, if you want to come up, stay for a month. Or we are also hoping to get some celebrity guests to come in and just host one night at least.
Cool. Well, I will let you know in advance. I get up to Chicago from time to time, so I'll definitely do that. Check it out. Thanks again, guys. Thanks,
thank you, Scotty.
Thanks, John. Scott.
Thank you,
John. And enjoy enjoy that hot weather in Texas.
Well, today is in the 40s, so.
Enjoy that, please, for all of us. It's 14 here.
Okay. For the Magic Word Podcast, this is Scotty out. It sounds like this will be a lot of fun and a great place to visit. I'll definitely make it a point to check this out the next time I visit Chicago. I wish them a lot of luck, and I predict that it'll be a long-lasting, popular attraction. Now let's find out a little bit about the rich history of bar magic in Chicago from one who has been there and done that, and in the process become a legend himself, Bill Weimer. Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and I have with me now Mr. Bill Weimer. Hi there, Bill. How are you?
Okay. How are you doing?
Doing great, thank you. And we're really kind of following up from a conversation that we just had with Joey Cranford and John Stirk to talk about the Chicago Magic Lounge, and they were talking about you being kind of the guy who helped them put this thing together. So you have a lot of knowledge, obviously, having literally written the book, I guess, about the magic bars and everything on the Chicago scene. And you've been a longtime resident of Chicago. I guess you lived there all of your life? Or
yeah, all my life. Mm-hmm. The Chicago area, too. I lived in Chicago pretty much until about maybe 15 years or so, and then I moved to the suburbs.
Mm-hmm. So in the Chicago suburbs, so hanging around kind of that area. And now the Chicago bar scene, as I recall, kind of going back just a little bit, I understand that years ago even there used to be a lot of magic shops. I mean, there were like, what, four or five within a one or two block radius even downtown way back when?
There were. There used to be I'm trying to think of the name of the place, but there was, you know, obviously Magic Inc.
Mm-hmm.
And there was Billy Bishop's in Riverside, and the Treasure Chest, which is the one downtown, which is where Bill Malone worked there and got his training from. Billy Bishop was an old vaudeville magician,
mm-hmm,
who decided to quit doing shows and open several magic shops. He had one in Old Chicago. It was an old amusement, mm-hmm, park mall. He had a shop there. And he had one on Riverside and one Oak Park. And he is Glenn Bishop's father, if you know who Glenn Bishop is.
Yes.
It's his dad.
Oh, okay. Okay. I know Chicago has such a rich history of magic, and a lot of great magicians have come from there and still live there, like yourself and others. And so I wanted to talk a little bit then right now just about some of the magic bars that have come and gone, like Shulian's, the New York Lounge, and a little bit of magic and some of those. Can you tell me just a little bit about kind of the genesis of how they got started? It seemed like they were just open for almost a short time in history.
Most of them have been open only for a few years. The, mm-hmm, the one exception was, two exceptions. New York Lounge, which was open for 40 years. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Shulian's, which was open for like 118 years.
Holy cow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so they didn't have magic from the beginning, but mm-hmm, it was from when Matt was – Matt Shulian was a young boy. He picked up the magic and started doing it in a restaurant, and it kind of grew from there.
And all these were close-up magicians, and they kind of just supplemented the rest. Were they mostly bars? Did they have food? Was it a restaurant? Were they snacks? Or what kind of places were they?
Well, the place that I started it was a little bit of magic. Okay. And it was on the south side of Chicago, and there was nothing on the south side. There was obviously New York Lounge and Shulian's on the north side, and there was Mr. C's Magic Lounge in Berwyn, which is a western suburb. But there's nothing on the south side, and the owner owned Izzy Rizzy's Magic Shop, which was the one magic shop on the south side.
Mm-hmm.
And his mom had a restaurant and didn't want to – it was a breakfast-only restaurant. And so breakfast, lunch, and she was tired of getting up early, but she didn't want to have a place where drunks hung out. And since her son owned the magic shop and was friends with another guy who was a magician, they kind of talked their parents into turning it into a magic bar.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing like it around. So it was a huge hit. And it was different in that it was very gimmicked, in that when you walked in the front door, you were facing three brick walls. And Wow. You had no idea how to get in.
Mm-hmm.
And there was you would pull the lantern and a wall would open up and you would be able to get in. And then once you got in, there was a Mars light going, a siren going, and the place was just full of activity.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing they had was that they switched the bathrooms so that the men's was really the women's and the women's was really the men's. And for the women's had the urinal and they put a dummy there. That looked like he was doing his business. So
standing there, yeah.
Women said women's on the door. And when they walked in, there's a guy doing his business and they would scream. So, and they had spiders coming down from the ceiling and, the faucet that floats.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And drops the water into the beer mug that was behind the counter. So there was a lot of little gimmicks kind of, that made the place really unique.
Kind of things to see, and it was kind of fun. Now, did they just do magic, or did they do bar magic? They had strolling magic, or did they have
stage? Strolling magic.
Uh-huh.
They had a bar, but most people sat at the tables, and they also had two stage shows. And what was kind of unique about them is the stage shows really never changed. It was they had on one night, and we'll say Friday, they had Dean Vitale, who was a part owner of Izzy Rizzy's and a friend of Mike's, and he did a big stage show with the tuxedo and the zigzag box. And it was funny because the stage was so small that there was when he would twirl the zigzag box around to show it on all sides, they had to squeeze around the box to get it to do it because there was no room on the stage. It was maybe about 4 feet.
Wow. Square.
And mm-hmm. It was very funny. And so anyway, Dean would do the show on Friday and then Mark Swartz would do the show on Saturday. And Mark was a mime.
Okay.
And he did talking too. See, he did mime, but he also did jokes. So it was kind of a weird act. And it was like that for a year. And then Mike decided to change it. And so then Mark went on Fridays and Dean went on Saturdays. But I mean, the shows on the weekends really never changed. And then the opening acts were the close up guys doing, 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And Lee Ramsey would do his linking ring routine. I would do the torn restored newspaper and needle through balloon and a half dyed Hank routine.
Mm-hmm.
Dave Meyer used to do, One of the things he did is the Buddha temple screen, and then he produced a rabbit, which was, yeah, you know, the crowd pleaser.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of it. Then during the week, they had hypnotists and mentalists and card readers. And then the owner himself was a ventriloquist, and that's where the name the magic shop comes from, Izzy Rizzy. He had a puppet called Izzy Rizzy. It was a little boy and he used to do school shows and it didn't really work in the lounge, but his shop got a rabbit puppet.
Mm-hmm.
And he just brought it with him. He didn't get to open it and he was at the lounge. He opened it up and he's just playing with it and they needed an act to someone to introduce the acts, I guess. And so he just went up there and winged it and told some, you know, he could be a little more risque. And,
yes, at the Evening Lounge. Mm-hmm.
And it worked. And, you know, it's funny. The material there, if you look at it now or watch any of the tapes or anything.
Probably pretty tame by today's standards.
It's very tame. But back then it was really risque, yeah. And people were screaming like, oh boy, he said that word, you know? And, and, so it became a place where anything went. Then comedians came in and the one standard was that there were, close-up magic at mm-hmm. the tables, strolling magicians, which was kind of unique where somebody came by and did a couple tricks and then went to the next table. And that's where I started. I was only doing it at about a year or so.
What year would that have been approximately?
That was – I started there in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing it about a year, and I lived in a neighborhood where it was a typical Chicago neighborhood. Everybody knew everybody. And during the summer, people would sit out in on the sidewalk, you know, bring a chair out and sit out or on the stairs, or we used to say sit on the stoop.
Stoop, yeah.
Yeah. And, I knew a lot of people in the whole area, through my cousin going, you know, it was one of those areas. It was like a 4x4 square area, but a block area, but it had three different ethnic groups in it. You had the Italians, the Germans, the Lithuanians, and they all had their own church and school and funeral parlor and bars and grocery stores and all that. And because I lived in one neighborhood and I had friends in the other and my cousin lived in, I knew everybody in there. So once I started doing magic, I became like a street magician. I would do magic for people on their doorways or on their stairs because they said, hey, Bill, come over and do a trick for me.
Yeah,
and I
had
no other audience to do it for. And so what happened is two of my neighbors went to a little bit of magic and told the owner, hey, there's a kid in our neighborhood who's pretty good. And they got me an audition, and I had to take three city buses to get to little bit of magic to do the audition. And, you know, so then I got hired.
Yeah.
And I became one of the six regulars at Little Bit of Magic. There were
and that was like other every guys Friday working. Night or something.
I worked one day a week.
Uh-huh.
I was going to college. I was doing not only studies in college, but I worked at the school too. And I was also doing, comedy on the radio there. And, trying to learn new tricks and having a girlfriend, I had no time than one night to do it. But there, the two guys that were still doing it today from there, one is Rich Papura, who most magicians don't know who he is unless you read like Mark Kornhauser's column. But Rich is really a funny comedy magician. He's just one of those guys that can – make anything funny. And his act is, you know, he'll take the gag like the baby pitcher and get 10 minutes out of it. He'll do color changing ball the cube and get 10 minutes out of it.
Yeah.
And so that he was there from the start. I knew Rich from Izzy Rizzi's. He was a salesman at Izzy Rizzi's. And once I walked in there for the audition, Rich was there and he already knew me. And he told Mike, oh yeah, this guy's all right. He comes to the shop. And Mike's going to hire me because
with his recommendation.
I'm going to go across the street and spend anything I make on new magic at his shop anyway. So how much is he really paying me? I think I made $3 an hour.
Yeah.
In 77. And then the other guy is, of course, everybody knows Bill Malone. Mm-hmm. Bill Malone started at Little Bit of Magic and he was working at the Treasure Chest. Lee Wayne was the guy that really taught him magic and really changed his life because Bill ran around with a tough neighborhood crowd. And when he went to the Treasure Chest and met Lee Wayne showed him another world that he didn't know about. And he actually wanted Bill to go into Little Bit of Magic and audition, and Bill was afraid to. And so he just went back and told Lee, no, they don't need me. And Lee was really upset saying, wow, you know, How could they not want you? Cause even back then he was really good, you know, and, so anyway, he went back in then and wound up getting hired and actually got hired full time. So it was Rich Papura and Bill Malone were the two full time guys. And then there were guys like me that did one or two nights.
And how old was Bill at that time? Was he about your age?
Bill, I was older than all of them, back then. Mm-hmm. I'm probably about maybe 5 years older than him.
Okay. Now, also, did they charge for the show or was it just part of the entertainment that was provided when you
back
go in for
then,
dinner?
Back then, it was just part of the dinner. And they had hamburgers and they had their steak dinner and their fish dinner, but most of it were sandwiches and fries. It was hamburgers and beef sandwiches and fish or whatever.
So
all
it wasn't like a
names.
It wasn't like a white tablecloth steak and type of a place.
No, not at all. It was pretty much, I think hamburgers were $2.50 or something, you know, with fries. The big steak sandwich, I have a menu or in the book I talk about the prices, and I think the big steak dinner was $5.25 or some $5.50. So,
mm-hmm.
So anyway, that was a little bit of magic. And they wound up being bought by a bank. What happened was the drinking age changed in Illinois from 18 to 21, and that hit the business really hard because it was a cheap place to go. And so a lot of younger, let's say 19, 20-year-olds, guys, kids in college would go there, and and they took a big hit when the drinking age changed. And the bank was – there was a bank building next door, and they wanted the place for a parking lot. So they gave them a huge offer. And of course, Mike said, okay, you know, we'll take it. And from then on, we used to call it a little bit of parking lot because it was, no longer there. So,
yeah.
But in the meantime, Bill had, after it closed, I really said, okay, well, that's it. You know, that was fun and let's go on with life. But Bill Malone was working at New York Lounge. He got a job at New York Lounge and he didn't think it was going to continue either. In fact, he tells a story and it's mentioned in the book that he was playing on his stairs in front of his house and he was playing with the chop cup and the ball fell and rolled and fell into a crack.
Uh-huh.
And Bill said, well, I'll never need that again. So, you know, what's
yeah, my career's over. No big deal. Yeah.
And just then his mom came out and said that Jack Murray from New York Lounge called. He's on the phone now and he wants you to work at New York Lounge. So Bill went in and Darren took the call, took the job and then said, now I need my chop cup ball. Went trying to dig it out of the crack.
Now, as I recall at the New York Lounge, I went there one time at Jay Marshall and watched someone who came to the table and they pulled up a chair and just kind of sit there like they were a guest and part of us. Was that kind of the standard at the lounge or was that just one person's style?
That was one person. New York Lounge, if you think of the shape of a milk bone biscuit, that's okay. Pretty much what the shape of the bar was.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of, it was long and then it kind of ballooned out on each end.
Mm-hmm.
And behind the bar, there were two guys during the week and there were four guys plus Jack. So really five guys on the weekend. And like I said, Bill was working there and they needed somebody. And so I went in to audition and got the job. And New York Lounge, it's really funny because it's very romanticized and oh yeah, but really it was like working a factory.
Oh really?
And almost like a third world country when someone described it like that. Like what were you working in? Because I worked Friday and Saturdays and Sundays. We started on Friday at 8 o'clock and I worked till 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And there were no breaks and there were no lunches and you just
cranked out magic,
just did magic and poured drinks.
Mm.
Saturday, it was from 8 to 5 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sunday, I worked from 6 to anywhere about maybe 2. And because they let me go home because I had to teach high school the next day.
Next day, you had to have at least a little sleep.
Yeah. And so there were no breaks. There were no I used to go into the restroom and just close my eyes and try to block out the insanity for a minute.
Was it that busy? Like, I mean, were there that many people coming?
It was always, it was busy. And then after 2 o'clock, all the bars closed and everybody came in. And so you had everybody that still wanted a drink come in, and they didn't want to see magic.
Yeah, they came to drink.
Just came to drink. And so you had people with a lot of drink in them, and they're trying to do the bunnies for them, you know, the sponge bunnies.
Sponge bunnies, yeah.
Yeah, and besides Uncle Jack and Nick Pappas, who were the owners, Skeets was behind the bar on the weekends. Bill and I. And then Hibahaba Al was there sometimes, but he worked during the week. And
I was about to ask, Hiba worked which bar at the
New York Lounge?
The New York Lounge also, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He actually had his own place for a while. He left New York Lounge. He had a place at a hotel, and he was there, and there was a big sign, Hibahaba Al's Magic Bar. And then he left, and they left the sign up there for like a year or two, and people kept coming in. And they said, "Oh, Al's not here tonight, but you know, have a drink anyway." So,
yeah.
But so Heba would, and I go through the book in the book on how they met each other and so on. But Heba was working basically during the week with Nick or Bill on during a week. Like I think Bill and Heba worked Tuesdays, and then Nick and Heba worked Wednesdays and. But Skeets was also one of the guys. But Heba was really funny. The first night I worked there, I didn't even know who the guy was. And he's this small Italian guy, funnier than anything. And I remember having somebody pick a card. And then Heba walked over and he kind of said to the people, you know, like gave him the, "Hey, can I look too?" And then he looked at the card and then went off to the side and – as I'm about to continue with the trick, he goes, "Psst, Bill!" Like they don't know he's doing this.
Yeah.
And then he holds up, it was a two of clubs, and he holds up two fingers, and he pretends he's like hitting with a baseball bat, you know? And it's obviously what he's doing, you know, but he made it look like he was trying to signal me. And I just busted out laughing. I was like, well, that, you know, so, he was the one that gave me the best advice at New York Lounge. And he took me aside and he said, you know, work this place a year and then get out. He says, because you'll work a year, you'll get anything you're going to get out of the place, you're going to get in a year and then get out of this place. And he was really right. And it turned out that that's what I did. I worked a year at New York Lounge and got another offer at the second little bit of magic and left. But it was tough working. It was not only tough working, but because, first of all, I don't even drink. So I have to make these drinks that I don't even know what I'm making. So I'm like the worst bartender in the world. And you're trying to do magic, but then guys behind the bar are goosing you. Skeets used to do a thing, a gag. "Hey, do you ever see an Eskimo go wee wee and put his hand by his crotch and shoot an ice cube?" You know, so you're working and yeah, ice cubes are flying past you. I had a chop cup that was the old beer can chop cup that Magic Inc. sold,
sure,
which was perfect for the bar. Bill hit it on me all the time, so when I'd go to try to look for it, the owners would yell at me because I'm not doing magic, and so it was. It was insane. It was people would cut in on each other, you know, at the right time. You knew there was a break or something. And
it was really a close-knit family kind of a unit.
It was.
I guess.
And it was like going to college because
in a fraternity.
Anybody that works there now can stop on a dime and play off something and come back to a trick. You know, there's some magicians that if you interrupt them in the middle of the routine, they're lost.
Right.
But this was, you know, you just stopped and played off anything that came your way. And then you had to pick up immediately where you were at and continue on. And so I always looked at it as like going to college. You know, I really learned is education there.
I heard a story, and tell me if this was New York Lounge or someplace else, and the bartender had a recorded message that sounded like it was coming from the radio about
that. That was Julian's. That was Matt Julian.
That was Matt. Can you tell
us? Yeah, he had Matt Julian had a couple of things that were Julian's were famous for. The first one was the radio, in that he had a radio playing, but he also had a microphone attached to it. So say they knew somebody at a table owned a shoe factory in Ohio. He was coming in and his friends said to Matt, oh, this guy owns a shoe factory in Ohio and he's coming in and we're going to have fun and stuff. And so in the middle of it, you know, Matt would say, there's a huge fire in the town in Ohio, and it's a shoe factory that's burning. And of course, the guy would jump up and start panicking.
It's my place. So, yeah.
Yeah. You know, one time he did that, and the guy said, let it burn, you know. But they had guys running out trying to catch cabs, and, you know, and so that was one of the things he had. So he would play off that. The other famous thing was the goldfish swallowing. In that they had a goldfish bowl and Matt would come out with he would grab a goldfish and pretend like he was going to eat it and just put it back. And then he palmed a soggy carrot that was cut in the same shape as the goldfish. So he would pretend like he was going in the goldfish bowl when he come out with this carrot, and then he would eat the goldfish carrot. Mm-hmm. And, he would also give it to people sitting at the bar. He'd give them a goldfish too. And every once in a while, you get the wise guy, oh, it's only a carrot. It's not a big deal. And then that guy would get the real goldfish. But the story is that college kids saw this happen, went back to school, and started swallowing goldfish. And there was a big craze.
Yeah. So, now, was Marshall Brodeen also one of the performers ever there, or did he just do stage?
Marshall Brodeen hypnotism has an interesting. If you ever read his biography, it's good. Excellent. He really didn't work these places. He was working a bar in Berwyn.
Is that like a dinner theater type of thing?
It was a bar, and it was a mob joint.
That was it. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a mob joint, and all the other bars around were strip clubs. And he tells stories how one guy came in, always gave him a hard time, and he hated working for the guy. And always when the guy came in, he'd go take his coffee break. And one night they told him, well, you don't have to take your coffee break because someone shot the guy last night. Someone put a hit on the guy.
Wow.
Yeah, so he really didn't work. He didn't really work these places.
Those kinds of bars. What about Johnny Platt or Johnny Paul?
They work them, but it's, again, that's before my time.
Yeah.
My time really starts at 77.
And did you ever go to the bar or see those guys work?
Never. Never. Oh. I never knew. I didn't pick up magic until 77. So.
But they were never in those bars. They were like in Julian's, or do you know where they worked?
They, I really don't know. I know Senator Crandall had a place that was under some L tracks up north.
I think Johnny Platt was working the Palmer House, now that I think about it.
Yeah. And then there was Al James worked with the name will come to me at the Ivanhoe. It'll come to me. But, yeah, there were a lot of Jim Ryan was another guy that had a magic
bar.
Jim
Ryan,
right. Yeah. But that was all before my time.
So a lot of things – go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm just saying that what I did with the book was it's really my life at the Magic Bar. And what happened was when I was working Julian's, I'd hear stories about New York Lounge. And I only worked there a year, and I didn't really know the history. And they'd tell me some funny stories. And I said, wow, somebody should write a book on the New York Lounge. And somebody, because they had their stock tricks. New York Lounge had a bunch of stock tricks like the sugar cube trick, the sponge bunnies, the panty tears, the card under the glass. I'll tell you one thing. I used to follow card in the glass. They had these cardboard coasters mm-hmm. for all the beer glasses and stuff. I used to take the cardboard coasters, shuffle them, and have someone pick a coaster. Mm-hmm. And I said, put it back in there. And I said, it's gone. They say, where is that? And I go, well, it's under your drink. Well, it's under everybody's drink. Everybody's got one. And I got tipped for that, actually. So
funny.
So anyway, with New York Lounge, I thought, well, somebody should write a book on the lounge and the history and the tricks there. And I actually interviewed Jay Marshall. I had dinner with Jay Marshall and Jim Krizak and Lee Levin, who worked both New York Lounge and Julian's. Mm-hmm. And I had this material for the longest time. You know, life got in the way of what I wanted to do.
Sure.
And, you know, family and all that. The kids were growing up. And I had this in several drafts. And then what was I going to do? Maybe I'll sell it to Magic Magazine or Genie or something that somebody might want a couple pages on the history of the New York Lounge or whatever. And it kind of sat around until Al James, who was the house magician at Julian's, he also worked New York Lounge. They were going to do a Tribune story, a Chicago Tribune story on him, being the last old guy doing magic, yeah. pretty much. Like, he's still going and he's still doing magic. And the reporter talked to William Pack. William Pack is a real good friend of mine, and he's kind of the unofficial historian of Chicago magic. He knows everything. Mm-hmm. And so the reporter asked Bill about the magic bars. And Bill said, well, why don't you talk to Weimer, because he worked them all. And, you know, Bill told me that. And then it kind of dawned on me, I did work them all. Out of the nine that were around at the from the 70s to the 90s, I'm the only guy to work seven of them. Mm-hmm. And that kind of fed, well,
you're the guy. Yeah.
Why don't I write, instead of about New York Lounge, I don't have to write about 40 years. All I have to do is write about the 1 year I was there. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with all the other places. All I had to do is write about my life there. But in the meantime, I could bring in the history, how it got started, the people that work there, the funny stories that happen, the you know, incidents and so on, and behind the scenes stuff. And so that kind of, once that came into my head, the book pretty much wrote itself. I had to just get a hold of everybody that I worked with. And it was funny. Some guys I had not talked to 30 years, and we picked up the phone and it was like yesterday, you know, it was just like you talk for an hour with them.
Pick up where you left off. Sure.
Yeah. And, everybody was enthusiastic about it. Everybody helped me with it. And it took me about 2 years because we got a puppy in the middle of it, and like everything stopped for 3 months. Well, we got this puppy. It was like having a baby again. And so nothing got accomplished then, but it was just a matter of trying to get a hold of as many people as I could. And the hardest part were pictures for the book, because mm-hmm. there's no pictures of the lounges.
Interesting.
Now, the newspapers may have taken some, but I'm not going to be able to get the rights to them, and they cost too much. But even like I asked Nick Pappas from New York Lounge, do you have any pictures of the lounge? And he said, no, I don't have anything. And it was like, it may dawn on me that this was their job, and who takes pictures of their job?
Exactly.
Yeah. Nobody had them. So I relied on a lot of 8x10s. And I also had to rely on some old videotapes, and I took frames from videotapes, and the videotapes were, first of all, on cheap cameras. They were either underlit or overlit. Mm-hmm. And they're like 35 years old or 30 right. years old. So I'm lucky I got them to play.
Yeah.
So some of those pictures they're not as clear as I wish they were. But I had to make a decision. Do I not include them and let the reader guess what's going on? Or do I at least, okay, it's a little blurry, but you get an idea of what it's like.
Right.
And so I just made the editorial decision. I think it's better to have a clue of what what it was like. Sure. And so that's why I did that.
Well, I got to ask you, obviously, just to kind of tip a little bit of the book, what are a couple of the funnier stories that come to mind?
New York Lounge had a 4 o'clock license. So, you know, like I said, the drunks came in after two. There was a leak in the ceiling at one time. And so that nobody sat there, Nick, the owner, put some beer cases there and had a glass to catch it. You know, one of those tall frosted glasses.
Yeah, yeah.
Catching the drips. Some guy orders a drink, goes to the bathroom, comes back, sees it, and just thinks that's his drink, and he downs it. Oh, and then he says, thanks, that we're gonna, what do I owe you? And Nick says, no, it's on the house.
It's on the house.
Yes.
That's a
One time at the second little bit of magic, Tim Cavanaugh, he's a big name in comedy. He's a singer that writes very clever, funny songs, comedian. He was working on stage and doing one of his songs, and a spider came down right in front of him during his show. And he kind of stopped and just was watching the spider. The whole show stopped as he watched the spider. And he took a book that he had as a prop, and he opened it, and he shut the book on the spider.
And the people could see this too, right?
Yeah. And yeah. So they all applauded when he killed the spider. And he had a line, because a little bit of magic sold food. He said, a little bit of magic, a great place to eat. Mm-hmm. So what happened was, when I saw this, I ran over and I lowered one of the gag spiders down. And so everybody's kind of seeing that. And then a woman turns and she's seeing like an 8-inch spider in her face. And the tables went up and people were screaming and drinks were flying. And, I got in trouble for that, but it was very, very funny.
And memorable.
Yeah, it was very, very funny. There's a story, at Houdini's Pub, which, was Bill Malone's. Bill Malone started there and then became part owner, that Mike and Clarence were on stage, and they were – Mike – again, Clarence is the rabbit that I was talked about earlier, and very sarcastic, and that Mike's the, hey, be a good rabbit, and you know, the rabbit's going to say whatever he wants. And he started a fight between some bikers and some other people, to a point that there was a – there were like 40 squad cars came in to break the whole place.
Wow.
You know, to clear the place up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the next night, that was a Friday night. The next night, Mike and Clarence were on stage again, and they came in wearing, construction helmets, you know, construction helmets, so that, expecting something else to happen.
Yeah. Wouldn't get hurt. Now, about what year did, the last, bar close, and which one was it?
Well, Shulian's closed in 1998.
Okay.
So,
and why do you think there was the demise of all these bars slowly until finally at 98, the last one closed?
You know, they all started for different reasons. They were all different, and they all pretty much closed for different reasons. Mm-hmm. Little Bit of Magic, they had the bank sell, the bank bought them out. The second Little Bit of Magic, don't know much about the finances, but I think the owner probably had enough. The third Bit of Magic, which I was small part owner, it kind of came out that the owner, the major holder of the stock, she wasn't really into magic and wanted to kind of turn it into more of a comedy place.
Mm-hmm.
And it became – she had friends that hung out there. They had their own little clique that hung out there during the week. And it was pretty much – we came in the weekends and did the big shows. And now we were kind of trespassing on their place.
Right, right.
And so it was a tense – I was constantly trying to keep the show in front – going while dealing with the stuff in the back, and mm-hmm. to a point that I just left. I just walked away because I just couldn't. I was there by myself fighting them.
Yeah.
And they turned, they tore our stage down, made it more of a comedy club, and closed in like a couple months.
It didn't last that way. No. Interesting. Now, you said you were a part owner, so does that mean that you just left your money behind and left?
Yeah, I wasn't going to get much out of it anyway. So I had like 10% in the place. It wasn't a whole lot. But, you know, what I got out of it is that I was the MC for the shows. I did the I did some of the shows. We had a it changed every week. So I was in this rotation. I filled in when people canceled. So I got a ton of material out of the place that, you know, I would never have a chance of.
Right.
You know, Shulian's closed because Charlie Shulian passed away, and the Mrs. Shulian didn't want to pass it along to the kids.
Ah, okay.
So, you know, that was her retirement, and she wound up selling it.
You know, and someone else bought it, or has
it's still there. It's called O'Donovan's now, and it's pretty much it's a bar with a lot of TVs and a beer garden, and that they still have magic there. They have guys walking around, but you know,
it's not the same as Shulian's was.
Not the same. When Jimmy Krizak, who was a wonderful magician, worked at Shulian's for about 20 years. Just a great guy, a people person, you know, like people liked him and he did really good magic. He passed away. And when he did, I wound up working a year. I was one of the guys to cover his spot. And I worked there once a month just to do it. Mm-hmm. And it was just, you know, you're in the way of people's watching the ball game, you know, and
right,
that kind of thing. You know, it was
people didn't come there for the magic. They came there because it was a sports bar just to kind of hang out. They just right. Interesting. And so that kind of for the last 10 or 15 years really hasn't been anything that has been as important or significant for a place.
There like has this. Not been. And there's not even that much magic at regular restaurants anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's because I worked Carlos Murphy's, I worked at Dave and Buster's, I worked at Boogie's Diner. Boogie's Diner was a closed store with a diner upstairs.
Hmm.
And if you saw the movie Diner, there's a character in there, Boogie, who is based on a real guy, and the real Boogie opened these combination of clothes store downstairs, trendy clothes, expensive trendy clothes downstairs, and then upstairs was just an old soda shop with milkshakes and hamburgers and
A regular diner. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I wound up working there. Rich Purpura worked for the group in Vegas. There was a convention, and he did a couple card tricks. Rich is funny, but not all that great of a magician. He can do, you know, a few basic things, but he's funny and they liked it. And they said, hey, can you come work our place? And he's been working cruise ships for about 40 years now. And so he says, no, I can't, but I know somebody in Chicago that could. And, I got hired, and Ed Keska, who worked a little bit of magic 1, 2, and 3 with me. He also worked a couple restaurants with me, and he worked Boogie's Diner.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed was funny because he's a typical blue collar guy, worked for the tollway, and just did really good stuff. Not a lot of stuff, but he had his set, and or a couple sets, but it was good. And again, it was people liked him. His big trick that he would end with, he did a routine with Glorpy about some leprechauns fooling around under the sheets, and he would pull the handkerchief away, and he'd have a goldfish in a glass in his hand.
Oh, cool.
It was unbelievable, and it screams when he did that, and fooled a lot of magicians that came in to see that. But Ed was a guy that I always had to get him out of retirement to work another place with me, and always worked Friday nights at the lounges because he just got off of work, and then he could run over the lounge, and he didn't have to think about it. Mm-hmm. But if he had, you asked him to work Saturday, he didn't want to because he'd think all day about it and didn't want to do any shows because then he had to think about shows. He just wanted that automatic, I'll go from work, I'll go there, and I'll do it, and I'll come home. And like I said, I pulled him out of retirement several times to work one more place with me. And, you know, he doesn't do it now, and I don't know if he's all that interested. He's, you know, retired now, and he has grandkids and that. But it's funny, I talked to him for the book and went over there, and he pulled out all his magic, and he found in his case a $100 bill for the $100 bill switch. And it goes, it was still in there in the thumb tip, you know? And
yeah, he says, yeah.
How many times could I have used this, you know?
When because I was down.
If I'd known it was here, you know? So.
Now, there are a lot more stories I know in the book and very interesting. It's called Now You See Them, Now You Don't. And for people who want to get a copy of this, where can they go? How can they find one?
Well, the easiest way to do it is my website, which is BLLWMR.com. Just Bill Weimer without vowels.
Okay.
So nobody knows how to spell Weimer, so I took the vowels out. So it's BLLWMR.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there is one of the tabs is for books. I wrote co-wrote a novel, and I wrote this book, and there are links to both books in there. But you can also go to magicbarbook.com, and that will take you right to the book.
Okay.
So besides the stories and the places in there, I have 10 magic tricks that I came up with. They're original. A couple of them are just pretty much, if you can force a card, here's a funny ending. But then I do, I have a cup and owl routine, which is a cup and ball, but with owls.
Mm-hmm.
It's the little owls instead of balls. I do a trick with magician trading cards and, little chatter teeth. If you're looking for four ace routines, this is not the book.
Okay.
Okay. But this is really wacky.
Would you say this would be get the money kind of stuff where people?
It is all tested and it all plays well.
Yeah.
Even how, you know, that there'd be a couple of things you say, well, is that all there is? Well, until you try it, you won't realize. Cause lay person, you know, here's an example. It's called the small card. It's pretty much somebody picks a card. You put it back. I can't find it. Was it a big card or a small card? Oh, a small card. You spread the cards on the table and there's a small card in the bunch.
Mm-hmm.
It gets screams. To us, it's like, well, that's really stupid and stuff like that. So, you know, you have a two, you force a two. You, can't find it. As you're shuffling, you just sneak the two in. It's a mini card. So it's sure. Very easy to do. And it was it a big card or a small card? And oh, here it is. And layperson's never seen a small card before.
Yeah, yeah.
So when they see that, it's like the funniest thing in the world. And when you turn over and it's that card, they're amazed, you know. And like it's,
yeah.
Look at the mouth coil. I mean, you know, okay, what's the big deal about the mouth? People are amazed by a mouth coil.
That's
you
true.
Know, or SpongeBob, Sponge Bunnies. It's
right.
It's the stuff yeah. that you know.
You don't want to discount those tricks because those
no,
are things that
no.
are really solid and they're time.
You know, New York Lounge did 40 years of the Sponge Bunnies, you know, and people kept coming back to see it. So,
right.
The whole purpose of the book, I wanted to get this in too, is that I had three reasons to write it. First of all, is that the places needed to be documented, which if I didn't do it, nobody was going to do it. So that kind of fell to me. The second of all is some of the people that I mentioned in this, our little talk here, nobody knows who they are and they're forgotten and that, but they really help magic, the art of magic in Chicago. I mean, there's big names and everybody thinks, oh yeah, these are the stars and that, but there's guys like these guys in the book all over the country that are doing stuff. And if somebody is fooled by it and likes it, they're going to watch the next magician to come by. And it really helps our art. And I thought these guys, they were good when they were doing it and decided not to carry on, but they needed an attaboy. And so that was what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
The third reason is to leave the story to my grandkids. You know, if I ever have grandkids, one day one of them will pick up and say, well, my grandfather was kind of a goofy guy, you know?
Yeah.
And what I wanted to do with the book, too, is I love show business story books, you know, like biographies where they mm-hmm. tell behind the scenes. And that's what I wanted. I wanted a book, not a formal thesis on here it is. I wanted a book that you can take to the beach with you and just drop in a bag and open it and start reading about a place or reading about the magic. And mm-hmm. and so it's paperback because I wanted it to have that kind of casual, fun thing to it, you know. So it's part biography, part history, part showbiz story, and a part magic book because it has tricks in it.
Sounds great. Sounds like it's got the whole package and everything, and something that's good, I think, that magicians could use, certainly to understand more of the history and to appreciate some of these guys who are kind of the unsung heroes who may not be as well known, particularly outside of Chicago.
Well, I'm a big example of that. Now, a lot of people don't know who I am and outside the city. You know, I'm well known in the magic community here and, you know, well liked in that. But,
sure.
You know, I'm just not that well known. But
there are just a ton of guys like that, like let's say on cruise ships, that they just are making a very good living, but just aren't as well known among the magic community. But that's not really what they're trying to do. They're there to try to share magic and make people smile in the world and do their jobs.
Right. And if you look at all the stuff that I did, you know, and I'm like, as Rich Purpura gave me this line, and I like it. It's like, you know, 38 years ago, I started at the bottom of show business, and I like it down here. You know, you look at it, I'm just a guy and I just, you know, I have a day job. I'm an IT person, but at night I've gone out, I've done things, I've tried, you know, done different shows. I work comedy clubs and that, and I'm just a guy. I mean, it's just like, you know, I'm not a big star, but I've done a lot with just being myself.
Great. Great. Well, let me ask you, as we start to wrap up over here, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. And so my question, Bill, to you would be, what would be your magic word? What is it that's important to your life? What gives your life meaning? I don't mean necessarily something like abracadabra, but what would be your magic word or phrase? It could be a couple words or a sentence or.
I like fun. How about fun. It? Just fun.
That's great.
It could be, you could do magic. You could do, you know, I love old time comedy. I like fun, laughter,
mm-hmm.
just someone having a good time. You know, fine. I have fun doing it. The people that have fun seeing me do it, and it's nice. You know.
Yeah. And whenever that you're having fun, then your audience is assured of having that fun because they can feel that in you as well. That's great. That's good. Well, Bill, thank you very much. I appreciate you being our guest over here and telling us a little bit more about some of the history of the magic bar scene in Chicago. So thanks again.
Sure. My pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
You're welcome. So that was Bill Weimer, and for themagicwordpodcast.com. Till next time, this is Scotty out. I had not heard many of these stories before, and I hope you enjoyed this snapshot into the history of bar magic in Chicago as much as I enjoyed learning this stuff. You know, I get almost as much out of the magic word as you do. I know if I was listening to this, I'd definitely be a supporter. And in that regard, I want to welcome Chicago magician Steve Chezaday to the Friends of the Magic Word. You may have heard me chat with Steve in several past podcasts. It's always great to talk with him, and I particularly now want to thank him for his financial support, too. Joining Steve this week, we welcome Eric Rumestan from France to the Friends of the Magic Word. I featured Eric on a full-length podcast on April 10th, 2014 that proved to be a popular episode that still has hundreds of downloads almost a year later. Eric is a sustaining member of The Magic Word, donating through patreon.com/themagicwordpodcast, where you too can join the others with your support. Please surf over to that website and view my 3-minute video. Thanks, Eric, and thanks, Steve. And of course, I thank you, the listeners who tune in every week to hear these podcasts. And now we are making it even easier to find us by being now listed on Stitcher.com, FeedPress.com, and TuneIn.com. However you get your feeds to The Magic Word, we thank you and hope that you will spread the word. So, until next time, stay well, get booked, and hide your brakes. This is Scotty out.